You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, I have Trent Fisher with Born and Raised Outdoors on the podcast. Trent was an absolute blast to have on the show. Super humble, super positive, upbeat guy, and was just an overall blast to have on the podcast. We cover the love for elk hunting and where that stemmed from for him as well as his crew. We talk about the filming trials and tribulations that come along with starting something brand new and starting to learn a camera and then trying to get all of the hunt and everything like that on film. We talk about going raw rather than the cinematographic type look, you know, that some people try to do. We also talk about the struggles to switching to a vlog as opposed to editing it all up and everything like that, the Land of the Free project, and a bunch more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation that Trent and I have.
All right. My name's Trent Fisher. I'm actually a team member of Born and Raised Outdoors. I live in Myrtle Point, Oregon, and love to hunt mainly anything, obviously, but bow hunting elk is kind of our passion that we kind of done for years, and so there's a little backstory. How about that?
Perfect. And I'm your host, Zach Harold. Trent and I have been, gosh, how long have we been texting back and forth and calling on the phone to try and get this set up? Almost a year, huh? Like, just busy guys. And I'd rather have people that are busy on the podcast than people that aren't really out doing anything anyways. That tells me that, you know, obviously you're out hunting and doing things with friends and family, and that's what's most important. So excited to have Trent on the podcast today. We're going to talk a little bit about Trent's love for elk hunting and kind of where that burning desire came from, as well as the burning desire for archery. And then we're going to move into the birth of Born and Raised Outdoors, and probably who knows what stories we'll get into for that. And then we'll hop into the Land of the Free project and the kind of the idea and the goal behind it, first off, and then how it became what it is today. So, yeah, thanks for hopping on, Trent. I really appreciate it.
And not a problem. Not a problem at all. I'm glad we finally got to work this out and make it happen.
Yeah, no, like I say, no problem. I completely respect people and their time and being busy. You know, if you weren't busy, then you're probably bored, and being bored isn't worth a dang.
That's a fact. Yeah, definitely.
So I really respect you and, you know, the other Born and Raised members for the love and the passion that you have, you know, it seemingly mostly for elk hunting, but I can tell that it's just for being in the outdoors and respecting the land and respecting the animals and everything like that, you know. Where did that love and that respect for and the burning desire to elk hunt, where did that kind of stem from?
Yeah, definitely. Pretty much, I mean, my childhood, you know, I grew up my whole life hunting and bow hunting especially too. My dad actually was one of the first people that started archery shoots. They would take these pieces of cardboard, and they'd get some glue, and they would glue them all together, these big sheets of cardboard, and then they would take a jigsaw, they would put a print of an elk on it, draw it on that hand draw it, and then they'd cut it out with a jigsaw, and he actually started archery shoots that way. And so I grew up going to all these archery shoots and these crazy times with a bunch of guys. It was awesome, you know, growing up through that and getting to see that whole movement go. And Yeah, it was pretty cool. But yeah, from a young age, we always archery hunted, and my dad was always successful, you know, with elk hunting, and this, you know, at that turn of the time, the bugling wasn't really involved. There was a few bugles out there. Aben's son was the one, and he was local here. And I just, you know, I had my first bow, bought my first bow from Ralph Moline, and just a great, great guy. And he was messing around with some bugles and stuff. And so my dad got into that, and it just kind of morphed from there, into calling elk and that whole thing. And it was just amazing. I love elk hunting just because I love all hunting. Don't get me wrong, but elk hunting, well, they're so vocal and they're just such a giant animal. And it's just, I mean, there's something majestic about elk in general that just took us passion in our hearts. And that's when kind of born and raised, we all got together. Nobody had done the Roosevelt elk thing. Nobody had there was films of it, don't get me wrong, but we just didn't feel like it did it justice. And so we set out to do something that it hadn't been really done, and successfully film Roosevelt elk hunting. And that's when the trials and tribulations, let's say, started also, because it wasn't easy. It was not easy. So.
Oh man. Growing up, was your dad a lot more into elk hunting as opposed to other types of hunting as well?
Yeah, I mean, we deer hunted with rifles, usually, always with rifles. Bow hunted a little bit here and there also. As we got older, we all got into more deer bow hunting also in the late season. But yeah, he was. We're all pretty rounded as far as rifle and bow both. But just for elk, it was always bow hunting. We've bow hunted them, and just because of the rut, you know, just so much more fun, and we were more successful. We were honestly more. Our rifle tags here for elk, they're what, 3 days, 4 days long? Yeah, that's all you get. Unlike you guys in Wyoming, you get 6 or 8 months. We have two seasons. We have two seasons here, and the first one's 4 days, and the second season's 7 days, and that's it. You're done.
Dang.
With the rifle hunt. So yeah, yeah.
I could see where that would be definite motivation to pick up a bow for sure. And I noticed too, absolutely, you know, even in other states, where I grew up, deer hunting is a good example. There for a while, the rifle deer season was 6 or 7 days, and there wasn't another one after that. That was it. So people started getting more into bow hunting because it was the whole month of September with, you know, hunting deer with a bow. So they're like, well, at least I can spend time out there hunting. I may not shoot one with my bow, but at least I'm out there hunting. And so I completely get that. As you had your goal set on starting to film your hunts, you know, I self film my hunts and things like that, and I understand some of the stuff that comes along with that. But what kind of roadblocks did you notice once you decided, Kate, this is what we're doing. We are filming our hunts for sure. That is our main goal. What kind of roadblocks and trials and tribulations you guys run into?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started about 11 years ago. We started in 07, and we just thought, okay, we're gonna do this. We got out a pen and paper. We wrote down rules actually for the guys, and so we had me and Trevor and Cody and Ty, because we knew we couldn't do it alone, so we had to have some help, and because Cody lived in Roseburg, which is about an hour away from where I lived, and so he needed a partner over there, so he got Ty on board, and it was me and Trevor over here. Trevor took out a school loan to buy our first camera. It was an old Canon. The whole Canon GL2, and he got that loan, and we bought the camera with a couple extra batteries, and we thought we were Spielberg, man. We thought we were big time, and so we had a rule book that you couldn't shoot unless it was on film. unless it, the camera was on the animal, you couldn't shoot it because we wanted to get the whole experience, right? We just didn't want the camera to be waving around and then a shot goes off and, oh, yeah, I got him. You know, you see that, you know, quite a bit on certain things. So it was like we wanted to do it right, and we wanted to do it actually with some production value. So we had a whole rule book of things, and went into that first year, and we hunted all season and didn't kill anything until the very last week of season. And this is our first DVD we made, which was called Tagged Out. And we killed 4 bulls in the last 5 days of season. So it was crazy. The whole, you know, the journey of the season and stuff, and learning new stuff, you know, learning how to film and learning, okay, what shots do we want to get and how do we want to portray this or what, you know, it's just, we didn't have a clue. We honestly did not have a clue. We just went with it. And it was successful in the end, but a lot of trials and struggles getting there. So yeah, definitely a learning curve. man, yeah, it was really difficult.
Now, I can agree with you 100%.
I know it. You put together some stuff. It's not easy.
No, it's not. And then on top of it, what I've found, and you may or may not have found the same thing, what I find is I'll go in there and I'll get like the shot on film, and then I get home and that's all I have is the shot. And I'm like, like, dang it. Now how am I going to make a video? Yeah. All I have is me shooting this thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the whole story, right? It's the trying to capture the whole essence of the story and how awesome and cool it is at the time. And sometimes you get back and you're like, man, it was so much better when I was there. It doesn't seem that neat now.
Oh, 100%. I think I get that way almost every time I get home. I've started where I make like a checklist. I need this kind of shot. I need second and B-roll here. I need this kind of shot. And then I need the kill shot. And I'm like, I'm going to make a laminated card and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start checking these off to make sure so when I get home I have what I need.
Oh man, no, that's exactly what we had to end up doing, because it was, you know, some people would, with this many guys, you know, some of us would go out and not get what they're supposed to, and yeah, so it exactly, we had a shot list and laminated cards and, oh man, everything that we needed to get each day. It made it so much easier too, because you just bang right through the list and get your shots for B-roll that you need, you know, your scenery, your slow-mos, your time lapses and such. And then the rest of it, you film the hunt and you can throw all that stuff in there. And it makes it, you know, so much neater, but
definitely. The time lapses are something that get me almost every time. I'll lay out the camera and I'll do one and then I get home and I look back and I was there for 8 days and I have one time lapse. I'm like, for real?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We tried to do two a day. That's the goal. And it never happened, but we tried to do two a day is what we try to do.
Yeah. And it's really, you wouldn't, until you're in the shoes of the editor and you're trying to go from one day to the next, you don't really see how important a time lapse is. And then all of a sudden you're like, how am I going to get to tomorrow? Am I going to put text in the movie?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it just doesn't work. And we were trying to, back then we were going for a cinematographic feel. Now we're a little bit different, not too much, but because we moved to YouTube and it's just a little more fast paced. It's just, back then we were trying to make movies, you know, and cinematographic movies and yeah, you got to have that awe feeling, you know, with the time lapse and the starscapes and all that stuff, you know, and it's just, that's what we thought was you had to have that, you know, you just had to have it. So anyway, it's just weird how things evolve and we, as, you know, filmmakers and as hunters, have kind of evolved into where we're at now, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of made that push for you? I know you mentioned you switched to YouTube and that was kind of a deciding factor, but what made you guys go from, hey, we want them cinematic with the voiceovers and the music and all these extra shots and everything like that, and slow motion, to we want it to be as real and raw as possible, basically. And that's what we want now. So what kind of, other than just going to YouTube, what else kind of made that, made you decide to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. We were, so when we used to make films, it was, you know, we'd shoot them and then we'd all go like to Cody's house. And we had an editing room there over in Roseburg. And we would just – everybody would sit down, and it was just a grind for about 2 months, you know, of – and not every day. It was just weekends because we all had jobs, you know. I mean, we all had regular 9-to-5 stuff pretty much. And so it was a grind. And so we'd just pound and DVD out, you know. And back then, Cody was just learning editing, and so there was a lot of learning curves there. And but we wanted to do that just, you know, the cinemagraphic thing because of – oh, the full draw film tour and a lot of that stuff. We actually started that. And so we started a film tour up and we just kind of, you know, we wanted the whole cinemagraphic video, you're in a theater kind of thing. And that's how we started. We wanted to produce movies. That was the whole thing. We wanted to produce DVDs, right? And so there was a guy actually that very first person that we worked with, his name was James Kyle. And he's like, man, guys, there's this thing. It just started. It's called YouTube. You guys should throw everything that you do on YouTube. And we looked at him and just laughed. We thought that was the funniest thing. Yeah, right. YouTube. DVD is the way, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
If we would have taken his advice, oh, man. It would have been so awesome. So as we got older and grew through a couple DVDs, that we had put out four or five DVDs there, we started hunting and fishing with the Hushin crew.
Uh-huh.
They're YouTube. They do great stuff on YouTube, great content. And they're the ones, honestly, that just sat us there and like, dude, you guys got to switch over to this. DVDs are a thing of the past. They're kind of dying. So we just looked at their videos and it's so much, it was easier to edit. I mean, you could do same day edits and shoot it in a vlog style. And we'd never really done that before. And so it was really new to us, but we took the leap, just a couple years ago is all. And we went through all of our old content, threw it all on YouTube, everything that we've ever done, except tagged out. We couldn't, those files were so lost and it was just, yeah, the way we put it together, it was, yeah, you can't even find it anymore as far as, you know, the original files, the old tapes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You're like literally have to put your video camera in front of the TV and record what the TV's playing.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. So it was we still have it in DVD form. We do have it still, but we cannot. I mean, you could never bring up the files on the computer again. They're so jumbled up and had no idea what we were doing back then. So we went to YouTube. And it's been awesome because we can just turn and burn on stuff, on content, and shoot it in a total different style, but still keep a little bit of a, you know, have a little cinematographic feel to it as far as, you know, throw in some time lapses and throw in some B-roll shots and stuff. It's not all just vlog shots and you know, kind of make it our own. And it's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun and we've definitely grown in the YouTube, you know, scene, trying to figure out how that works for us and stuff. So
yeah,
it's been great.
So what was one of the hardest things for you guys switching from, you know, basically the generic cameraman filming someone else to cameraman now filming himself and talking and letting people know, you know, much more like a vlogging style? What was one or two of the biggest struggles in that switch?
Yeah. So when we switched over, it was this whole, you know, big vlog, the vlog word, you know. It's like, how do you, you know, I was okay if someone was shooting me with a camera and someone was filming me and I could really, you know, kind of be real natural. But man, it's a total different game when you turn that camera and you look right into that lens and you're like, there's a lot of times that I'll, even now, I'm not kidding you, Zach, even now, I'll turn that camera around and I'll stare at it for like 10 seconds and then go, nope, and then push the off button and be like, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. So, yeah, it's a totally different
Here we go. Field. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, you got to pump yourself up for that stuff. So, yeah, it was – oh, man. It was a total different thing. But once you start doing it – and I still get nervous. I'd be lying if I said, oh, I'm just fluent and everything. No, I still get really nervous at times of what I'm going to say or how it's going to come out or whatnot. But like I was saying, it's so much easier to just with jump cutting and that kind of stuff. You can make it fluid and make it flow along when you get in the editing room and cut something up pretty quick.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I find sometimes when I point that camera at myself, it's almost like I run out of stuff to say, you know, cause here I am, I'm videoing the deer. You can tell that I'm stalking the deer. And then I flip the camera around and I'm like, well, as you can see, I'm stalking.
Yeah, no kidding. That is the truth, definitely. It's kind of nerve-wracking, you know, especially at first when we were doing it. And I see these vloggers, you know, these daily vloggers on YouTube and stuff, and they just, I mean, they just live with that.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about everything. I had Cocoa Puffs for breakfast, and back when I was five years old, I ate crayons, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, switching to the YouTube thing, it was obviously a change, but a good change. You know, I can see you guys. I can tell that you guys are definitely growing. You're creating your own following and everything like that, which is awesome. Congratulations. I mean, that's something that definitely takes work. So first off, congratulations and awesome Thank content you. And idea. I mean, that's just epic. For the people listening, if you haven't gone over and checked them out on YouTube, Born and Raised Outdoors, they just did a giant project, Land of the Free. So speaking of that project, so here you guys are, you know, a couple years ago, you came into the YouTube space. You know, you're getting better at your vlogging and everything like that. And then, so how did even the Land of the Free come about? You're just like, one day you're like, hey, let's just, you know, no big deal taking on filming for 50 days straight and putting everything that we film on YouTube for every single day. Like, that's a huge project. So what on earth made you decide to take on that monster? Like, it's awesome. Don't get me wrong. I think it's epic, but that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a brainchild of Cody and I. We all got together and we wanted to make a kind of a, as we got into YouTube, we kind of wanted to make a splash a little bit, you know, like what's something nobody's ever done before. So we sat down and we're like, well, what if we hunted all season long and we filmed it day by day and posted that after season's over, that whole day by day, the whole day by day scene that we go through and the ins and outs and blah, 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 and just throw it up. And we're like, yeah, that'd be cool. So then from there, it morphed into, well, let's do four different states. What if we picked four different states and then we, you know, did that hunt every single day in four different states. And that was like, okay, let's try that. And then after that, it was like, well, the way, if we really want to, you know, get people to watch this and tune in, let's hunt with some of the best, you know, or the, you know, the most influential hunters and stuff in the YouTube industry, or let alone just the hunting industry. And so we started making phone calls and we called Hush. They were, of course, all in. We called Elk 101 and they were all in. Nobody said no. Everybody was just like, yep, we'll do it. Yep, we're going to. Yeah. And so it was, we came out of that meeting going, okay, well, now we have to hunt all season long. We didn't have a clue. Honestly, we did not have a clue what we were getting into. We just had this idea and thought it would be cool, you know?
Yeah.
And then the hunt, it was, yeah, I ended up hunting 53 days straight. I was there for the whole project. Cody had little kids and so he was there for most of it, but had to go home for a couple of the states, and I just stayed with it. I hunted 53 days straight, and in five different states, actually. We took on Montana. That was just one of the last issues because Phelps Game Calls, they wanted to go. And so we're like, well, I know Montana. They're open until October 15th. Let's go hunt Montana. So we hunted clear through the 15th of October, and by then I was done. I was done.
Oh my gosh, so, I bet.
But it was amazing. Yeah.
I bet a lot of
hunting, a lot of great.
Yeah. I bet that completely weighs on everything, physically, mentally, like that's a lot going on right there, especially you where you did it straight. That is a lot.
Yeah, it was a ton, man. It was a big undertaking. We hiked. I did a journal, which was kind of cool. I think it was my wife said you should do a journal every single day, which I've never really journaled before, to be totally honest. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I had a little journal that I charted down how many miles I hiked that day and kept track of everything. And I'm kind of glad I did and kept track of the elk we saw on that and that day and stuff. And yeah, it ended up. And I hiked 524 miles, I think it was.
Holy crap.
So it was a lot.
Did you wear out a pair of boots?
It was a lot. Yeah, the old Crispies, they've seen some action. That's true. I think this year I'll do a different pair, but yeah, they were great.
Man, that is awesome. So
definitely.
Because I tuned in and I watched quite a few of those of your episodes. What as you're filming, it in my opinion, it kind of takes a little bit pressure off when you move from, hey, we're going to film all day no matter what, and that's what we're going to post, to I can only post this if I shoot something. I think that kind of takes some pressure off. But at the same point, you're still like, I got to film this and I got to post it. So what, as you were going state to state, was it kind of the same challenge in each state, or did each state kind of present its own challenge as far as filming goes?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started out, and that was our biggest fear too. Honestly, when we started was our biggest fear is just, you're not going to kill anything every day, something every single day. And we came out of Oregon. We started out in Oregon, and I think in 8 days we killed six bulls in Oregon, which is unheard of. I mean, unheard of for Roosevelt hunting here on the coast. It was amazing, amazing that we did that. And it was like, we come out of the gates shooting, And, so then we jumped from there to Wyoming. And we had great success in Wyoming. All of us tagged out in Wyoming. I killed a bull. It was awesome. And then we got to where the season, how the rut goes. And then Colorado, we only killed one bull. And then Idaho, we only killed one bull. Everybody got chances at bulls, but it just, it was tough. And then we got to, in the end, we got to Montana. It was snowing like a foot of snow. It was 12 degrees. I've never elk hunted in anything like that before.
It's so miserable.
We didn't kill anything. We didn't. Oh, it's miserable. Yeah, it was. And we didn't kill anything. And so we had some shots, at some bulls that we missed and stuff, but to get back to the editing, and I'm like, man, I don't know. When we start, we go sometimes 5-6 days without killing an elk, and it's like, well, it happened. Let's just put it out there. And that was the neatest thing to me about the project was our viewership, instead of dropping off because we didn't kill something, it actually went up. It was actually the opposite of what we thought it would be, because people actually enjoyed the struggle, because that's real, that's what they go through every single season. And it was awesome just to see the community of hunters all gather together and just be like, you know what, you guys, this is so awesome. That's what happened to me this year. And that's, I was in Idaho and that same storm came through, or, it was really, really cool to just see that. And it was the camaraderie between hunters is pretty amazing. So that was really what was so cool about it to me, is everybody kind of teamed together as hunters and enjoyed the struggle along with the success as well. So
That is awesome, and that's I know one thing for sure, and is I respect your guys' films much more than a film that is only there because they shot something, you know, and I understand it. It's nerve-wracking as heck when – because my Wyoming elk season was the same way this year. We got in there and we didn't see an elk for the first 4 days. All we could see was fog because we could only see 80 yards. It snowed and we froze our butts off. Like it was miserable. And the second to last day we got into elk and my wife shot at one and missed, and that's hunting, you know, and I'm piecing this thing together, yeah, kind of like you're thinking, and I'm just like, man, it would have been so cool if we would have shot one of those great big bulls that was screaming in our face, but we didn't.
Yeah.
And that just makes exactly. It real, like you're saying.
Oh, man. Yeah, it becomes real in a hurry. You know, I mean, that was – like I said, we were worried. We were just like, well, here this goes, you know, and it was the total opposite effect of what we thought it would be. And it was just, man, it was a true blessing to see everybody just, you know, jump on the same bandwagon and just, you know, because everybody's been there. We've all been there, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hunting, you know, and that right there, when you're about ready to post something where you missed or whatever else, you kind of get a checkup from the neck up, you know.
Yeah, I wounded a bull this year, and that was another thing, you know. I wounded a bull two, three days anyway before I ended up shooting the one that I got. But yeah, and we sat back and we're like, man, we are going to take some serious heat from this. And I said, but it's real. That's, we have to. I shoulder bladed the bull. The bull was fine. We saw him after that. We bugled him back in, honestly, and didn't quite work out. But it was like, well, it was real. We're showing it, and we showed it. And I don't think there was one negative comment on the whole thing out of like 300 and some odd comments. Everybody was just – they gathered behind me and just like, Trent, get your head up. You're going to – you know, when we posted it. And it was amazing. It was just amazing, the hunting community, how accepting and how – awesome they were on a scenario like that, because, you know, it's the same thing. It goes back to they've been there too at times, you know, or they've seen it happen, or they've went through that kind of emotion before. So
yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I completely understand that feeling. I had a deer. I was shooting this deer from up above him, and it was a frontal shot, and I had complete confidence in the shot, and I jerked the trigger when I shot, and my arrow actually went through his face. And I just was like, yeah, I just, you know, and then he ran towards me and stopped naturally, and arrow just went through his face. So then I shot him, you know, made a great shot. And then he ran over there and he was about ready to die. And I shot him again. Cause I just, if I can shoot again, I'll always try to, you know.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's a crazy topic. Like, there's a lot of people that won't do that, and it just bothers me. But I was piecing that together, and I was thinking to myself, you know, I could just block out this shot here that I'm fixing to zoom in on, and you watch my arrow blow all the hair off of his neck and his face. And I was like, I'm just doing it. I'll just have to ride the wave of negativity, and I didn't get a single negative comment.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's the way it should be, right? I mean, we've all made mistakes before. We're human.
Yep.
It's going to happen. We just, you know, we try to make those mistakes as little as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's man.
Well, and that's definitely not our goal.
Sometimes, that's for sure.
You know, it's not like we go out there with like it's my goal to make a bad shot. You know, oh gosh, all of us hunters it's our goal to make it happen as quickly and ethically as possible. Obviously, that's why we practice all year. But absolutely. Man, there's sometimes you hit that branch you couldn't see, or you flinch, or whatever else, man. That's that when your heart is pounding through your chest, what do you expect?
There are so many variables in bow hunting. It's amazing that it ever goes right.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, and that's why we love it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So what, you know, you guys had a project like that. What are you going to do moving forward? Are you going to try and hunt more states and film all of it? Or like what kind of things you guys thinking about doing for moving forward? If you can discuss it anyways.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So this next year we've been posting videos here and there all the way through, in between, Land of the Free. Actually, it was a project that we launched that November 1st, and we ended up, when we finally got done, our last episode was, Christmas Eve. It was, December 24th. So it was a lot. I mean, it was a lot of time behind the computer because people, you're out hunting every single day doing it, and then you come back, and then it's this whole thing. You got to relive it all over again. And then the editing room and doing that, and the videos don't just fly up, right? It takes some time to do them. And so it was almost like two hunting seasons in a row. And, man, it was, as far as family and stuff, it was tough at times, you know, just because you're up at 5:30 in the morning and you edit and get ready everything. And then we shot uncuts every day to make it kind of live. And so we would shoot we started out the end of the videos, we were going to make like a 1 to 3 minute segment just to kind of wrap up that day and just to kind of talk about how it went. And then, and that morphed into something totally different. And, it was great, doing shout outs to people. And it was pretty soon it's whole entity in itself. And some of those shows were, 20 minutes long. Some of them, it was amazing how that went. But yeah, it was a ton of work editing this thing up and getting this monster all tamed down and taken care of. But so this year we're going to do it over again. We're that smart. So, so we are going to, I'll do, instead of 53 days this year, I'll probably do somewhere around 42 days or so. So we'll still get 50 videos out of it, and it'll still be a day by day hunt thing. And, at the last state that we go to, Cody and I are going to split up. So he's going to go to, he's going to go to, I think, Idaho, and I'm going to go to Wyoming. So we'll split up on those two hunts. And so we'll still get the 50 videos. It's just, we won't have to stay out in the woods for that duration of time. So.
Gotcha.
Excuse me. Yeah, so it should be good. So this year we're super excited about it. We're going to be hunting with some new people this year. A lot of the same people also, but some new people and get to see some different personalities and meet some new people out there along the way. It should be a lot of fun. We're really, really excited about it.
That's awesome. I look forward to it. And if you guys need any help or help, promoting or whatever, don't hesitate to ask, because, obviously by you hopping on the podcast, you're helping out. So I'm more than happy to help out any way I can as well.
Absolutely. That'd be great. That'd be awesome, man. That'd be great.
So, well, sweet, Trent. Well, I appreciate you hopping on the podcast. I had a blast just talking, because, it's always fun when you get to talk with a fellow filmer that has gone through the struggles and the wanting to throw your camera. And it's always great knowing that other people are out there having the same struggles you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's real. It's definitely real. And, yeah, love what you're doing also, man. It's so cool to just fellow hunters and just outdoors and stuff. It's awesome to see. And that's the neat thing about YouTube and about the hunting community is we're all one, right? I mean, we're all together. We're all in this together and we work together. And the neat thing about collaborations and just like doing this podcast and stuff and tide raises all ships. So let's portray the outdoors in an awesome way and get out there and enjoy public lands too. And, because, there are lands to use. Definitely. If I could say anything to anybody, it's we did this neat thing, but the reason that we did that whole that whole hunt, the whole five states, 50 days, is to show that anybody can do it. I mean, most all of those were over the counter tags, went down, bought them at the store, And anybody out there, anybody can go do that. It just takes a little bit of drive of getting up and just saying, okay, this year I'm going to plan to go to Colorado and I'm going to go do it. And it's not as expensive as people would think. I think a lot of people are scared, you know, to take that leap and to go out there and do something that they're not really comfortable with. But but even if you're unsuccessful, like in a lot of states, we didn't even kill an elk in Montana, but it was so much fun, and I learned so much about the state and the terrain, and that hunt was amazing. It's one that I'll never forget because it was so cold and dealing with adversity and dealing with the weather conditions. And it was just like, that was one of my more favorite hunts, even though we didn't shoot anything. So it doesn't take killing an animal to be successful at all. So, but that's, I guess, what I would like to say, you know, in this, Zach, is anybody can do these things that we've done. And it just takes just setting the goal and going out there and just achieving it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think people look at, you know, buying the tag, you know, like, let's look at Colorado, for instance. You know, you buy an over the counter tag there, you're looking at about $626. And I think people look at that, they're like, oh, that's quite a bit of money. And then they're like, but then I got to do the research on where to go and the gear I need to take. And they build up like this false, thing that basically deters him from doing it. So I'm telling you right now, just to reiterate, all you need to do is decide to go, and then you set the goal. I'm going. You buy the tag, and then you are going, you know? But the hardest thing is deciding. That's the hardest thing. Is
yes.
Man, I'm looking at going to Colorado, but I don't know, blah, 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 blah. Go. Go buy the tag, and then you're going.
Just go.
Yeah, just go.
I've never once talked to someone that actually, you know, just got out and did it. And I've never once talked to anybody that ever said, yeah, I regret doing it. Not one time have I ever talked to anybody and they've said that. It's always been. Even if they didn't kill anything, they always had the time of their life and learned new things. You know, you won't regret it. I promise you. I promise you won't regret it.
You won't regret it. The one thing you will regret is not doing it. But just
sooner. Yep.
Exactly. Just throwing this out there for you guys. This happened to me last year. If you are getting an over-the-counter tag before you drive all the way there to buy the tag, make sure they still have them. Because I drove all the way to Idaho last year. It was like 9 or 11 hours. We drove all the way there, and the guy at Walmart's like, oh, we sold out 3 days ago. And I was like, what? So that makes for quite the story. So you will regret not calling ahead.
that is the truth. That is the truth. Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if you have maybe 10, 15 minutes and you have a story that comes – a bow hunting story that comes to mind that you'd be interested in sharing for that.
Yeah. So this is a story actually about my dad when I was – a lot younger. I wasn't even old enough to hunt yet. And my dad's cut timber all his life, and he was on his way to work, and it was storming here on the Oregon coast. It gets really, really bad storms. And so our rivers and creeks really, really swell up and with rainwater and muddy up and everything. And he was on his way to work, and there was a herd of elk in front of him. Well, it was bow season. And so dad jumps out with his bow, I kid you not, and runs down the road, and it's pulls back his bow, and we could, you know, see him pull back his bow and shoots, kills this elk. It was a cow tag. It was a late season cow tag, bow cow tag. And anyway, shoots this elk. It runs out in the creek, and this creek is like raging and barely can make it across. The rest of the herd can make it across. This elk dies right. He's just double lungs it. And then this elk dies right in the middle of the creek and starts floating down the river. And so dad's running down the road. And I'm like, what is going on? And so here it goes down the creek it goes. And it was like a sent from God. There was a rock right in the middle of the creek. And this elk wraps perfectly around this rock, dead. laying there. And so get back, and Dad had some rope in his pickup, and so we tied the rope to a tree on the side of the creek, and Dad strips down to his underwear. And we're talking middle of winter here, this late season cow tag. I think it's right there in December-ish, you know, it's cold, cold, cold.
Golly. And
swims out there. Yeah. Gets way upstream, swims out and catches that rock, gets a, and just on top of that elk and ties the rope to its around its neck. And the hardest part was the elk. They're big, you know, and trying to get that thing with the current pushing against it to try to get it unlodged from behind that rock. He was struggling and struggling and struggling, finally gets that thing free. And so, and it's, and the rope's tied off to a tree on the side. So it's just going to swing it into the, and Dad rode all the way through the current and got him back in the pickup, warmed him up and dried him off. And then we got the elk and went to work on the elk and breaking it down. But that was a story that kind of sticks with it was pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. And not exact age, but roughly how old were you when all that was going down?
You know, I want to say I was probably 9, maybe. maybe 10 or 11. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So were you just like sitting there thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, my dad is crazy? Or were you just like, oh no, this is normal. Get it done, Dad. Like, what were you thinking?
Yeah, it was pretty normal for our family. It was pretty normal. I've seen him kill quite a few animals actually, before I could even hunt, you know, and back in the old Martin Cougar days, you know, when he had the old bow and that it was the overdraw, that was the cool thing. You know, you had an overdraw. So your arrows are like, you know, 8 inches long, pretty much, you know, and it was everything, you know, it's amazing how bow hunting has evolved and just so you could get more speed, you know, to make those overdraws. And it was cool. It was really, really cool to watch through the years how bow hunting has changed so much, but stayed the same. You know, you still have to put an arrow through the lungs of an animal. So it was cool. And that was a story that stuck out to me. It just, you know, one of those things where it's like, wow, that is, you do anything you can to get the meat and to do the right thing. And so sometimes it involves swimming a creek that's probably 50 degrees, you know.
When you grabbed that rope and jumped in and started swimming, were you like, oh my gosh, please don't, like, were you worried at all about something happening to him, or were you young enough that?
Well, that was the hard thing was, it was like, how far do you go upstream? You know, cause we had a pretty good amount of rope there. And I was like, well, how far? Cause it was swift, really, really swift. And it's like, well, you know, I don't want to undershoot it and, you know, not be able to get to the elk. And so, and the rope, it was getting pulled by the current at the same time. And, that was the hardest part as far as just trying to just kind of eyeball it and time it right to where he actually jumped, got to the elk. And, yeah. So, but as a young kid, that's pretty impressionable.
I could imagine. Yeah. I bet you're just like, yeah, my dad's like super dad. Like, he swam out there and tied the elk off and got it out of there all by himself.
Yeah.
Oh man.
No, he's pretty awesome. My dad's cool. The family.
That's incredible.
Our family. Yeah.
Definitely. It's true. It's amazing what you'll do good meat. You know, the stuff that I've done to get an elk in the freezer, you know, is crazy as well. You know, you walk through waist deep snow and whatever, but then it feeds you and your family for the rest of the year on, elk meat's pretty hard to beat.
It really is. It really is. And it's amazing how we honestly hold that animal at such a high, you know, you know what I mean? It's that's like our lifeblood, right? That's like our bee's honey. So, I mean, it's like, oh yeah, we definitely, it's a huge respect for the animal, and you got to do everything you can in order to, you know, once you take an animal's life, it's, you have to do everything to recover that meat and out of respect alone.
Yep. Yep. 100% agreed. Well, thanks for sharing that story. That was, definitely one that I have not heard before. So that was awesome.
No problem. No problem. Thank you, man. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, one star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.